Any chance Kawhi goes back there next summer?
Oh, that would be hilarious, man. Hey, you never know, man. You know, if Paul George is throwing up bricks and the Clippers lose by 50, maybe he'll look for greener pastures again. So, hey, everybody, welcome back. This is our 125th podcast. We're at the end of 2020, but we're excited to end this off on a high note. Thanks for joining me on the Business Casual Basketball Podcast. Aaron Washington, come back at you on the mic here. And this evening, I'm joined by Aram Palamudian. He is one of the interns helping out with me with Hall Pass Media and Sports Business Classroom. We've been collaborating on a project called No Trade Clause. It's a really awesome resource, NBA website that has draft pick trackers, trade trackers, cap sheets, anything you guys are looking for when it comes to the business side of basketball. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that once we get to the end of the podcast. I'm going to tell you guys exactly how you can find this and check out our work. But Aram does some great work on there for us. It has a lot of great skills, and he's been a very beneficial guy to have on the project with us here. And I'm very excited to have him on the podcast to talk about some NBA this evening. So Aram, thanks so much for joining me, man. And I'm excited to talk about some of these rookie extensions and then getting on to some Western Conference predictions with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Aaron, for having me on. Actually, this is my first podcast I've ever been a part of, so bear with me. I'm excited to talk basketball with you.
Yeah, same here, man. It's going to be pretty straightforward here tonight. Last week, I went over three of the six non-max rookie extensions that are pretty prominent in the NBA circle right now. Those were Jonathan Isaac, Markel Fultz, and then ending off with Luke Kennard. So this week, we're going to look at three more. It's going to be OG Anunoby, Kyle Kuzma, and Derek White. Those are going to be the three extensions we're looking at this evening. And they're very interesting for different reasons. They're not some of the big high-profile players kind of like to talk about last week, but they're still very key contributors to these teams that impact winning on a big scale. Let's go ahead and look at these three rookie extensions because they're very interesting. And then this first one here especially, I'm really excited to talk about. He's been one of my favorite players in the NBA ever since he came into the league. He's one of those kind of utility players, Swiss Army knives that, you know, really any team could really use on their roster. So Toronto has had the benefit of re-signing OG Anunoby to a rookie extension the last 4 years here. Total value of $72 million, and that includes a fourth-year player option based on reports that we've heard here recently. So, Aram, what do you think of that deal here, man? Do you think it's a good value for the Raptors overall? A little bit of an unconventional player. He's not going to dominate the ball here a lot. He has a low usage rate, but he's a pretty good defensive player. So what are your thoughts on that end for the Raptors on that deal?
Yeah. So with OG, I think that his skill set, his versatility, his defensive capabilities, and also his ability to shoot the ball pretty reliably and also be quite a big part of Toronto's offense. They needed to lock up this deal. I think the value is great. I think that at $18 million, I think average annual value, that is a great value for OG Anunoby. I mean, you gave up a player option, sure, but so he could leave you a year early. But I think overall, it's a good deal for the Raptors.
My thoughts exactly. When I saw that deal, you know, I was very surprised to see $18 million annually. I'm sure that, you know, you and me and several other people were, you know, wouldn't have been surprised at all if he got about 20, somewhere in the $20 million range annually. So really great value. I mean, Jonathan Isaac got more. He got $80 million over those 4 years. So just an example, they're both swingman players. They're both very talented defensively. I actually think OG and Anunoby is a little bit farther along offensively. You know, his three-point ball has really come along nicely for this season so far, only through three games, but he's shooting 35% from there. He was at 39% last season. So if he can kind of split the difference to get to about 37-38%. I mean, that's a lot of great value from a wing player that can play the three or the four. He can guard the best player on the other team, the LeBrons of the world, Paul Georges, Kawhi Leonards. And that's extremely valuable, you know, especially in a postseason scenario. You know, I like to think about the Denver Nuggets a lot with Jeremy Grant, you know, the role that he played for them, you know, guarding LeBron James and those guys that they went up against, guarding the Clippers wing players. I mean, that's very valuable in today's league. So, you know, teams are always looking for a guy like that. 3-and-D is in high demand. And when you consider that you're not even hitting $20 million overall over those 4 years, that's really great. Even with the player option, you know, I concede that.
Yeah.
If I can lock up a guy like OG.
Yeah, I think a lot of people around the league view him as like one of, not the most capable perimeter defender for those guys, as you said, like LeBron, PG, guard those guys. So really good get for the Raptors. And I mean, the main reason for doing this early was because Giannis is out of the race now, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, for a 2021 cap space. They could afford to give OG that extension, wow, sacrifice a little cap space by taking that extension early for OG. But with Giannis out of the race, they probably have their sights set on more middling, like free agents, not really going for the superstar anymore. So yeah, definitely a good deal for the Raptors, and good job for OG.
Yeah, I really love it for him. I mean, he's kind of steadily progressed his game ever since he came in the league as a rookie. You know, he started out very raw, and his role has always been kind of small. You know, I looked at his usage rate here over on the Cleaning the Glass. They have usage rates for each of his 4 years in the league. And, I mean, they're pretty low across the board. I mean, he's not even eclipsing like 17, 18%, 20%. So this is a guy that, you know, he plays a lot of minutes. You know, for this season, through three games, he's already at 36 minutes a game. So he's obviously a big part of the rotation. But he's not one of those players that you're going to give the ball to and let him finish plays, like be the primary shot creator for your team. I mean, they have guys like Kyle Lowry and Van Vliet, who also got a big extension. Guys like that can handle that role. But for OG, it's mainly just, you know, hit those threes, guard the best player on the other team, and attack closeouts. Because, you know, with the space that's opened up from, you know, Siakam commanding attention and Kyle Lowry, he can catch the ball on the three-point line, take it straight to the paint, and he's actually a very strong player. I mean, that's kind of like an underrated part of his game. You know, he's a pretty good finisher. He's very strong, and he can use his body to get into defenders and really just create opportunities at the rim. So across the board, like, he's not a glamorous player, but he's somebody that every team would love to have on the roster. I mean, any way you look at it. And he's only 23, 24. Yeah. So there's upside there too. You can't really beat that.
Absolutely. And when I was looking at Toronto's cap sheet, 2022 and the season of 2022 and beyond that, they only have four players on their cap sheet. So that's Siakam, Van Vliet, and Anobi now, and Malachi Flynn, who they just drafted. So that's a really clean books to have. You have like three solid guys there with Siakam, Van Vliet, and Anunoby. You know, none of those guys are going to like underperform their contracts probably. They're said they want a championship together. So yeah, Toronto's looking good, like moving forward in terms of how clean their cap sheet looks.
Yeah, I love that too, man. I mean, Toronto is one of those franchises. They're just really smart with how they sign players. You don't see them going along and signing guys for ridiculous values. Like when they sign somebody, they're completely sure that it's worth it. You know, you look at Kyle Lowry's last contract, you know, I think it was only 2 years or 3 years. I mean, it's $30 million, I believe. But I mean, for a guy like that, all-star, I mean, it's well worth it, you know, for a guy with years of experience. And then you look at like Van Vliet, Norman Powell, OG Anunoby, Siakam, who we, you know, it's a guy we've looked at a lot, just looking at doing these cap sheets and, you know, our discussions. And we've all kind of come to a consensus that he's well worth that contract, because the floor is very high for players like that. You know, they're great around the edges. They do the little things. They defend. They play hard. So you can't really lose on contracts like that unless they get hurt. And luckily for the Raptors, their guys have been pretty healthy. So I definitely agree with you. Those books do look really good for them going forward. You know, Kyle Lowry's coming off the books, and they're going to have some opportunities. So even though they might not get the Giannis, the big fish that they were looking at, they're still in great position to really make a great team, even though it might not be a championship caliber team. And, you know, there's worse places to be than that in the NBA.
For sure. Any chance Kawhi goes back there next summer?
Oh, that would be hilarious, man. Hey, you never know, man. You know, if Paul George throwing up bricks and the Clippers lose by 50, maybe he'll look for greener pastures again. So
reunite. Yeah.
Reunite, man. That'd be great. But yeah, overall, man, I think OG is a great guy to look at. Fascinating. So, you know, he dominates on defense. So now we're kind of switching gears here and looking at a guy like Kyle Kuzma. He's the inverse of OG. You know, he hasn't been known for doing the small things. He's not really been known as a guy that's going to really dominate on defense. He's not going to like dive for loose balls and stuff. Kuzma's MO for his whole career so far has been score, score, and score some more. So, I mean, looking back at his career numbers, I mean, he's been kind of like a up and down shooter. I think his rookie year is actually his strongest year as far as percentages go. And then he's kind of slacked off a little bit since then. But I mean, I will say though, you know, few games in the Lakers season, like I've been pretty impressed with Kyle Kuzma because, I mean, I've been one of the biggest critics of this guy. You know, I always said he was a one-trick pony. He doesn't fit on the Lakers team. You know, he's a shooter that doesn't shoot well, so that just hurts his value for the team. But, I mean, he's been hustling through the first few games. I mean, I watched him against the Timberwolves, watched him against the Clippers. I mean, he's getting chased down blocks. He's made a few good passes in there. And I know you're a Lakers fan here, Rom, so I'm sure you've seen, you know, your fair share of Kyle Kuzma. So, like, give us your thoughts on what you thought about the deal before the season started and then maybe how that's changed now you've seen him in action through just a few regular season games.
Yeah, so in terms of the contract value, I actually forgot to, like, completely think about Kuzma's free agency coming up, and then his contract extension just came out of nowhere. And then I figured the first thing that popped in my head was, okay, $13 million a year, 3 years. Like, that's like much less than what you're seeing other guys get, you know, in free agency or with rookie contract extension. So my first thought was it's a pretty good deal for Kuzma. Mm-hmm. At the same time, as you said, his ceiling is capped. He's a scorer who doesn't shoot well. He doesn't pass the ball very well. His defensive capabilities are questionable at best. So there's definitely a cap on, like, what Kuzma can reach. And in that case, like, it's pretty hard to, like, say this is a good deal. But maybe it's just, like, what he deserved, like, $13 million a year. Sure, let's do it. Like, we won the championship last year. Keep the squad together as much as we can. Add some new additions here and there. And let's run it back, you know?
Right. You know, I like how you just told, you know, you're just saying, like, basically, like, this is what he's worth. Just, like, plain and simple, just based on what we've seen so far in his career. And the thing about Kyle Kuzma is, like, he could definitely score the rock. Like, before LeBron came along and he was kind of working with guys like Brandon Ingram and some of those role players, like, he was one of the featured pieces on offense, and he was actually, like, a pretty solid scorer. You know, he can go and put up, like, 17, 18 a game for you. So, I mean, looking back to that season, that might be more of, like, a more accurate indicator on, like, what he can do on a night-to-night basis. And just for kind of comparison's sake, I mean, his career averages, you know, it kind of paints that same story for you. You know, 33% from three, you know, if you throw in this season's numbers. But, I mean, like, so far through the first few games, he's at 13.5 points per game, 47% from three, 50% from the field. So he's been very efficient. And, I mean, the crazy thing about Kyle Kuzma and what he's done so far is I don't think it's going to really hold because, you know, if you've seen a few of these games the Lakers have played, like, some of the shots he's taking are not the shots that are going to fall consistently. Like, fading away, stepping back, and hand all on his face, like, that's going to go down. Like, he's going to fall from 47%, obviously. But as we've seen previously, like, scores get paid, and they get paid quite a bunch more than defensive players. I remember seeing an article, I think it's been a few years now, but they get paid, you know, quite a bit more than defensive players. I want to say defensive players get like 50 or 60 cents on the dollar compared to offensive players. So that's just the way it's going to be. If you can score, you can't do anything else, but you can score, you're going to get paid. It's just a trend.
I think we see that with, even though OG got more money than Kuzma, we know that he's a much better player, much better fit on most rosters. So it shows that defensive kind of like lower 50 cents on the dollar you're getting with OG compared to Kuzma, where you're getting a dollar on the dollar, you know, right on the right on the amount. But he's one of the as you said, like the Minnesota Timberwolves game where he was just hitting those shots, like one after the other, blocking shots. I think a big reason for that was AD being out of that game. So I think he felt more confident being in the starting lineup, just like the old days when he was playing with Lonzo and Ingram and those boys. So, yeah, I think he just had more of an opportunity. He took advantage of it, and let's see if it continues. He's like one of the few young guys we have left on the roster. So I like this move to keep Kuzma on the roster.
For sure. And I think it kind of lets us know that the Lakers have really taken this approach. Like, this is their roster. They're going to run with it. Like, I don't really think we're going to see any kind of buyouts on their end, kind of crazy deals. Like, they have Kuzma, they have THT, you know, Taylor Horton Tucker up over there making some noise, Alex Caruso. Yeah. So they're pretty much built and they're ready to go.
Yeah. I think in all positions, because we got Schroeder too at point guard. We lost Avery Bradley on the wing, but. Yeah, we can make up for that with like more KCP. Am I missing a shooting guard that we have? I'm not sure.
You said KCP, you got Kuzma. I guess THT is technically a shooting guard. I mean, you guys are stocked, honestly. Like
Wesley Matthews. Wesley Matthews.
Yeah. The poor man's Danny Green. Is that an assessment?
Yeah, pretty much.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I like the roster all the way around, and Kuzma is just kind of adds on to that depth. And I mean, sure, the Lakers could have looked around to find a trade partner. I'm sure they've had discussions maybe last season about that. They looked around and thought about it, but ultimately, like, there's not really any kind of major opportunity cost with doing this deal. You go look at their cap sheet, look at their numbers. You know, they're capped out. They don't have any wiggle room. It's not like they're going to cost themselves 21 cap space or anything like that. Like, they already have their big guns. They're set. So they can re-sign Kyle Kuzma. And then the other thing is, you know, for that third year, I believe there's a player option for his deal as well. So for Kuzma, that's definitely a positive. He'll still be in his prime when that deal ends. He'll be in his late 20s. And, you know, for the Lakers, they can move off of him if they so, you know, if it comes down to that, they're not stuck with him for 4 or 5 years. So I think for both sides, it's a low-risk deal. And, I mean, honestly, even if he underperforms, they have pieces that can step in and help, like Markieff Morris. You know, Davis is going to play a lot of minutes for them, obviously. And, you know, they're kind of deep already at those positions. So it's not a huge deal.
Exactly. Yeah, we're looking at a 2+1 here. So definitely not going out 4 years. So that's a positive for sure.
Absolutely, man. We have one more player to cover. This is going to be a guard for the San Antonio Spurs. And we're going back to the kind of, utility players that kind of do a little bit of everything for a team here. So Derek White definitely fits that bill, man. Like, I'm looking at his total contract value, $70 million over 4 years. So a little bit less than OG, but it does include $5 million in incentives based on a report I'm getting here. I'm on hoopsrumors.com. So, you know, if that's the case, that definitely changes the equation a little bit for the Spurs. But overall, like, this is another deal that I think from the surface can seem a little bit excessive. Like, I feel like only the most diehard people really know about what Derek White provides to the team. Like, you go ask somebody that's not a Spurs fan and doesn't watch a lot of basketball, it's like, what do you think about Derek White? And they might say, like, who is that? Like, yeah. I mean, I know about you know, I know about Murray, and, you know, I might know about, like, you know, some of their other wings, but, you know, Derek White is not one of those big names. He's definitely flies under the radar. But I read a piece about him today. Jackson Frank put up a piece on uprocks.com talking about what he offers to the Spurs, and it's two-way capabilities. And, you know, he's a good ball handler, pretty good in the pick and roll, can finish at a decent level. He had some great shooting in the bubble before he got hurt. I believe he sprained his ankle, you know, in those seeding games. And then also defensively, he's great on and off the ball. So we're going back to defense again. He's getting rewarded for doing the little things. But he does have a little bit of upside on offense. And he might even be able to do slightly more than OG on that end. So, you know, again, looking at a $70 million for 4 years, your thoughts on that deal. Is it fair for the Spurs, fair for Derek? How does this impact their bottom line?
Yeah, so I think it's a fair deal at $17.5 million average annual value. That's pretty much what OG was getting. So OG got a great deal. I mean, the Raptors got a great deal. Spurs, not so much. Pretty much right on the point, maybe, like Kuzma, I would think. But as you said, he was very underlooked, like, throughout his career. Even coming into the draft, he fell to, like, I think the 20s. But he's a relatively older player compared to the rest of these guys. So maybe his ceiling has already been reached, not reached or almost reached. And as we see, like, with his sprained ankle, he's already out to start the season. We have to wait and see what his availability is moving forward.
True. I mean, you mentioned his age, 26, almost 26 and a half years old already. So, I mean, this deal is going to take him through age 30. So, I mean, he could get another sizable contract after this is over. You know, he's not going to be extremely old. But for a guy like Derek, combo guard, so we're looking at a guy that also has pretty low usage. I mean, still higher than OG Anunoby, but, you know, he's only broken 20% one season. That was last season. That put him in, like, the 47th percentile first position. So, you know, pretty average usage. He's not going to dominate the ball at a huge level. But for the Spurs, they have plenty of perimeter options. So they don't need Derek White to be that guy that just, you know, commandeers possessions and, you know, all that good stuff. But, you know, you mentioned that also that he was picked later on in the draft. And as a 29th pick, you're getting a guy that can do these things for you. That's great value. That's, you know, that's a really great return on investment compared to where he got drafted at. And then you look at the overall offensive profile. Like, I agree with you. I think it's a good value. It's not like they're getting a steal or anything. I don't think he's going to outperform that deal at $17-18 million a season. But, I mean, for what you're getting, I think it's perfectly justifiable, especially when it comes to defense. I watched some clips of him in the bubble and going back to last season, since obviously we don't have any film for this season yet. And, you know, he had some great plays. He had some really great instincts. He's really strong. He stripped, Luka Doncic a few times, LeBron, AD, like some of these guys, like he's a really solid defender. So when you throw that in to good offense, you know, not anything crazy, but good two-way player, like that's a really good return on investment right there. You can't blame the Spurs at all for wanting to lock him up before he hit free agency pretty soon.
Definitely. He was a key factor in like pushing the Spurs almost to the playing game in the bubble. As you mentioned, he was playing great. And I think moving forward, like Derek White could be the Spurs' best player, honestly. I think he's playing better than DeJounte Murray overall. And we don't know what's happening with DeRozan. Aldridge is on the downslope. So good for both sides to lock up this deal. And I really like Derek White for sure.
Me too. And, you know, last thing on him is really just his upside. And, you know, it might be kind of like a downer for the Spurs. You know, if Derek White's your best player, like, I don't know how far you're going to go ultimately when it comes to like getting a playoff spot or contending or anything like that. But, you know, all things considered, if you lose on DeRozan, you know, LA ends up moving on here pretty soon. You know, he's getting up there in age. You know, Derek White can be a placeholder for him. You know, keep them competitive, because like honestly, their wing guard rotation is really exciting. Like you look at Murray, you look at him, you look at some of those other guys that they've just drafted, and I believe they drafted Keldon Johnson last year. Lonnie Walker is like probably one of my favorite players to watch, like especially in transition. Like he is explosive. You know, he's actually a pretty good shooter. Like I had no idea that last season he shot 40% from three. Like, would you have thought that last season, you know, Lonnie Walker was a 40% shooter? Like that actually.
Definitely not. No.
Yeah. Really surprised me, man. So they have some promise there on the wing. I don't know how that's going to work out for them, but you know, if Derek White can kind of lead the way until someone like Lonnie Walker or someone like that steps up for them once they get to be older, and that's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, and they drafted Devin Vassell this year. I haven't seen much on him, but I hear that very good things about him for sure.
Yeah, I mean, another shooter. I think that's probably why they let Brent Forbes walk to you know, the Bucks. So if Vassell can come in and offer that, you know, being you know, there in the draft and somebody that can kind of they can bring along, and he probably has higher upside. You know, Forbes really just only shot for them. He didn't do anything else. So if Vassell can come in and do a little bit of something else, then they're in good shape. So, you know, between those like six players they have at those one and two positions, like they're going to cover every base. So exciting future for the Spurs, at least when it comes to their backcourt. I love that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And talking about cap stuff, since we're part of no trade clause, Spurs have a ton of cap space next summer, and they had almost nothing to lose by doing this deal right now.
True. What kind of cap space are they looking at, Ron? I'm just curious. You know, they have max space. Like, is that enough for a max player, a max and a tier two player? How does that kind of come into play?
So when you factor in the cap holds of DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, they don't have any cap space. But if they choose to move on from those players, then they open up approximately $50 million of cap space. Gotcha. So that's a lot of money. This is including Derek White. So they have $50 million to spend on whoever they want if they renounce their rights on LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan, I believe. One little quirk about Derek White's deal, I saw this, I think, on The Athletic. John Hollinger had mentioned that the Spurs should have done a descending contract instead of an ascending contract because of all the space they have next summer. They could have saved money on future years by front-loading Derek White's salary. But unfortunately, for whatever reason, they didn't do that. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, on that front, they could have taken a page out of the Orlando Magic's book, because the Magic, I think at this point, are like masters of the descending contract. Yeah. Like you go look at Aaron Gordon and Vucevic. You know, it's funny because like Aaron Gordon is a young player. Like he's still in his mid-20s. Vucevic is an older player going into his 30s, and they're both, you know, declining. So I guess the Magic are just like, we're playing the long game with this. Like, we don't care if we don't contend this season. We're going to push out our cap space. We're going to push out some room farther out. So I definitely agree with that analysis. Like, you know, especially a guy like him, like, he's probably not going to get much better than he is at 26. Like, there's a little bit of more room for a higher ceiling, but I don't see him kind of expanding his role in a big way. So I definitely feel like the descending contract kind of would have benefited them. But either way, pretty solid value for a guy like Derek White. Definitely underrated. You know, more people need to pay attention to him.
Absolutely.
So if you're ready to go around, I think it's about that time, man. We have the Western Conference predictions, the seeding predictions here, 1 through 15. Me and Aram have taken the liberty of just throwing out some predictions here where we think who we think is going to finish at the top, going all the way down. You know, of course, you know, the season's already into play. We've kind of seen a little bit from these teams that might give us some indication of where they're headed. But, you know, I am excited to talk about this because our picks differ a little bit here. But I think that's going to be the case no matter who you talk to in the NBA circles, just because the Western Conference is so volatile right now. Like, there's so many great teams. I think 90% of people out there are going to have Lakers, Clippers, somewhere in that order. A few people might have them a little bit lower, not sure. But after that, it's just, you know, a crapshoot. You really don't know. Like, Blazers third, Blazers eighth, Rockets fourth, Rockets ninth. Like, it's just all over the place. So, Ron, why don't you start us off here, man? Like, you know, I'm sure you have the LA teams one and two, but I'm really interested to see who you have after that. And there is one team on that list I'm really eager to talk about because it's definitely a hot take, at least from where I stand.
All right, I'm down. Let's do it. So these are updated as of today, taking into account current standings and current injuries, of course. So I have the Clippers as number one. You want me to just list them down? One through 15?
Let's get rapid fire. Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it.
I'll start with Clippers, number one, even though I'm a Lakers fan. Lakers, number two. Jazz, number three. Nuggets, number four. Then the Mavericks, number five. Suns at six. Blazers at seven. Pelicans at eight. Okay. Timberwolves at nine. Rockets down all the way at number 10. Then I have the Kings, 11. Spurs, 12. Warriors, 13. Thunder, 14. And Grizzlies, 15.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
You heard it, folks. That's not a typo. That's not anything like that. It's Grizzlies at 15. I haven't seen that one yet, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that. But before we hit that up, man, why don't you talk about the Timberwolves pick and what about that team has you higher on their potential for this season? I know a lot of people like myself have them in the lottery again, kind of like the same 12, like 14 range that we've seen in prior seasons. So is it Cat and D'Angelo gelling, Edwards? Do you think it's going to have a big season? What gets you excited about the Timberwolves and where they're headed?
Okay, so I have the Timberwolves jumping up five spots from number 14 all the way up to number 9 this year, just in reach of the playing game. And the primary reason for that is their upgrade at point guard. D'Angelo really didn't play a lot of games for them last year. Jeff Teague was their primary ball handler, who's a good player, no doubt. But I think upgrading the point guard position to D'Angelo Russell and Ricky Rubio just allows the floor to be led by a floor general at all times. Good point guard to play with Towns for sure at all times. And just, I know Towns is missing some time to start the year, but I'm hoping after a few weeks or something, we'll have Towns back or a few games. And D'Angelo, Karl Towns will figure out the chemistry together. And then they got the number one pick in Anthony Edwards, who was not really a controversial pick. A lot of people thought LaMelo Ball should go number one, but Anthony Edwards was a solid pick. He's playing great to start off the season. He's energetic. He's driving to the basket. He's doing all these crazy step backs that I'm watching on House of Highlights and all that. So, yeah, I just really like the Timberwolves. And I think maybe part of it is all the other teams moving down, pushing the Timberwolves up. So that's definitely something to keep in mind for sure.
I like it. Those are good
you know, valid observations, man. Like, you look at D'Angelo and Cat. I mean, they're definitely two players that have wanted to play together for a long time. And that's really one of the reasons why I got bummed out over Cat's injury. So they played one season, or they played one game together last season, like you mentioned, and they are just getting to the point where they're like finally going to take off together. And then Cat is out, you know, before you even get 1/10 of the way through the schedule. So definitely a downer for them. It's going to cost them, I think, some games in the beginning. So they're going to have to play a little bit of catch up to kind of get back to a place where they want to be. But I mean, overall, like, yeah, they do have a solid roster. D'Angelo and Rubio, that's a super deep point guard combo. And at times, just watching their first few games, they've played those two together. So, I mean, D'Angelo is definitely a guy who can play off the ball. He can be more of like a spot up shooter in certain spots. And, you know, like a guy like Rubio is going to find him, you know, if he's got any kind of space. So definitely some solid pieces there. Edwards, I do like Edwards. Like, he's going to be one of those guys that within 2 or 3 years, he's going to be averaging like close to 20 points a game. Like, I can see it already. You know, I can see the shot creation ability, very confident player. He's going to have to work on some of his decision-making. He's definitely had some spots in the first few games where he's missed some open shooters, and that'll come with experience and just learning the system and learning the NBA. But overall, like, definitely a great player. I love the pick for the Timberwolves. Like, I think that's the guy they should have went after, all things considered. And it kind of fills a little bit of a need for them at the wing. You know, Jarrett Culver is not going to do that for them. Okogie is not going to do that. So they were kind of a little bit lacking. So, I mean, great pickup for sure. I will have some counterpoints on that, though. I have them a little bit lower in my standings. So just going off of what I have, man, like, I put the Timberwolves down at 13. So not the bottom. Like, I do think they're going to have some good moments. They're going to be a, you know, a decent team. But it's just tough. Like, I look at, you know, their defense, first of all, like, D'Angelo and Cat definitely don't inspire a lot of confidence on that end. The other pieces of the roster are definitely going to have to come together to try to compensate for that, which is going to be tough. You know, if you bring in Okogie, definitely not an offensive player. You're going to lose out on that. Malik Beasley can fill in that role a little bit here and there. You know, Edwards probably not going to offer much defense himself. Definitely not a calling card coming in. But yeah, I mean, I do think their offense definitely gives them a chance. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they got up higher to that play-in spot. Just because, you know, I think they're offensively, like, flammable. They can definitely catch fire, and the pieces can work together quite well. But it's going to be tough for them, I think. Like, it's a tough conference, and there's definitely some holes on that roster. Like, backup center, I think they're still a little bit lacking. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see where they end up. It's going to be a fun season regardless, whether or not they can kind of hit that projection you have for them. But, you know, I definitely see where they're coming.
Yeah. And a lot of this is also dependent on Karl Anthony Towns coming back healthy, playing well, and helping that team push into the playoff seed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is vital. Like, if he's got to be back within 5 games or something like that, if they don't want to lose a lot of ground, that's definitely critical for him. Tim, or Grizzlies, how are you looking on Memphis? Does that have a lot to do with the John Morant injury? Is that why you're, you know, dropping down? Because that's pretty low. Like, I wasn't expecting that.
That is pretty low. A lot of it has to do with Ja Morant. I just thought that he is the Grizzlies right now. And as soon as he went down, I saw the timetable of 3 to 5 weeks. I thought to myself, how many games are they going to win during that time? And then after that, when he does come back, are they just going to coast, go for another high lottery pick? I just thought that they wouldn't be able to make up the ground that they would lose from the Ja Morant injury.
It's definitely possible. Like, I mean, you stated it perfectly. Like, he is the Grizzlies. Like, everything they run is through him. It's kind of like the role Luka has assumed for the Mavericks out there. Like, there's really two ways to play this game of basketball. You know, you can have a you know, equal opportunity offense where everybody touches the ball, no one player dominates. You think of the Torontos of the world, you think of the Utah Jazz teams of the world. They really just share the ball. Miami does that as well. And on the other hand, you might have those teams that say, like, we have one of the 5 to 10 best players in the league. Give them the ball. Everything else just work itself out. So the Grizzlies took that route. The Mavericks have taken that route. You know, there's some other teams out there that definitely do that as well. So, you know, you look at the Grizzlies, they definitely fall in that latter category. It's one guy that definitely dominates it. The Hawks were that way before this season. They definitely have more assistance now. But last season, you know, he had the ball in his hands every time down. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to hurt immensely not having John Morant. And the other part of it is they don't have somebody that's really that good to fill in. Like Tyus Jones is okay, I guess, you know, he's fine. But when you need creation, you need some offensive juice. Tyus Jones is one of those guys that you bring into the game and you say, like, just hold the lead. That's all we need from you. But to create a lead or a comeback, that's not the guy that's going to get that done. So I can see that for sure. I will say that I made my list, I think, before the season, and I had Memphis, I believe, at number 9. Actually, no, not 9. 10, I think it was 11. 11. Let me double check that. Make sure I have that right. Yeah, 11. So I have them 11th. So I have them out of the playoffs. I have them just outside a play-in spot. Injury is definitely a part of it. Like, you look at Jaren Jackson, he's already out. That's going to hurt them for sure. And then, you know, they're kind of just weak behind those two guys. So if Jaren Jackson, John Morant missed time, which we've already seen with this injury, they're just it's downhill from there, man. It's really hard to keep up in the Western Conference. So, like, I don't know if I'm all the way on board with them sinking all the way to the bottom, but I definitely have them a little bit lower than last season for some of the same reasons.
All right. So who do you have all the way at the bottom?
At the bottom, I had the Thunder at the bottom. So I believe you had them 14th. And I went ahead and just put them at 15th. Although they are really looking – they're looking pretty good, man. Like, they have some pieces there. Leave it to the Thunder to find some jewels. Like, they can ship off all their best players. And then the next people that come up, it's like they have promise as well. So Lou Dort, Baisley, just looking at, you know, SGA, like, there's some promise on that team.
Yeah, even last year, nobody thought they were going to make the playoffs, I think. I mean, not that I saw. Everyone had them out of the playoffs. So,
yeah,
they were surprised last year. They may be a surprise again this year. But I have them at 14th. They, a lot of turnover on their team, and they look like they're going full on for the high draft pick situation. So
definitely. Yeah. And I think their coach and their whole just organization, they're still – trying to inspire confidence in these players, because with the altered, you know, lottery format, there isn't an incentive to be 15th. So you can be 13th, 12th, 11th, and still get the number one pick. So they're telling their guys, like, go in. I mean, not that they're going to try to lose anyway. Like, players don't do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're going to play optimal lineups. They're going to try to get wins where they can. They're going to play SGA as many minutes as he can handle. Baisley, Dort, the next generation, so to speak. I mean, they're all going to get as many minutes as they can. It really realistically play in an effort to be competitive, since, you know, you can be a little bit better and still secure one of those picks. Like, ask the Pelicans. They did the same thing with Zion Williamson. So no incentive to tank. So we're going to see all these teams. And I think somebody said it last night on Inside the NBA. I think it was like Charles Barkley, like Shaq. They said there's no bad teams in the West. Now, I totally agree. Nobody's going to be awful. Like, even the Kings, the Timberwolves, they're fun to watch. They have some great pieces. So it's a fun watch all the way around, man. I love this conference, and I can't wait to see how this shakes out.
Definitely, definitely. I'm not feeling so high on the Warriors, though, from what I saw first game and their second game. Yeah. I felt like their chemistry was off. Steph was underperforming, so hopefully he gets back to being who he is, because without him, they're just going to be like last year, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a repeat, and, like, I will say, and I know you have them pretty low, you know, on your list, a little bit lower than me, but if they lose Curry at any point, like, they will sink to at least 11th or 12th, like, without question, because he's everything for them. It's kind of like the whole John Morant situation. It's like, he's the guy, like, you know.
Especially with play out.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm with you on that, man. Like, their ceiling is limited. I'll go ahead and go through my list a little bit so you can kind of, you know, have something to compare it to. So my first two teams were the same as you, Lakers, Clippers, but I do have the Lakers at 1 and then the Clippers 2. But I think, of course, that can definitely flip flop depending on if the Lakers rest their guys, or, you know, they slept a little bit for whatever reason. I have the Nuggets at 3, the Blazers at 4, Mavericks at 5, Jazz at 6. So I think I think the Blazers and the Jazz swapped around. I think we had the Mavericks in the same spot. I think the Nuggets are generally in the same spot. Suns here at 7. Warriors at 8, although I'm not feeling great about that pick, I will admit. Rockets 9th, also a little bit iffy on that one. Pelicans 10, Grizzlies 11, Spurs at 12, Timberwolves 13, Kings 14, and the Thunder rounding things out at 15. So, you know, definitely for the first, I think, six, seven picks were pretty similar. You know, Suns down there a little bit lower in the conference, Mavericks kind of in the middle. I have the Warriors at eight, but like I said, like anything can happen. They can definitely sink way lower. I just have faith in Curry, and they are starting to figure it out. I watched, you know, saw their last game against the Bulls, and granted it's the Bulls, so, you know, can't really take too much away from that. Bulls and Pistons, like the last couple games, but they are starting to figure it out. And I think Curry can kind of carry them to at least a play-in spot.
Yeah, and Wiggins and Oubre just started off really, really cold to start off the season. So if they get their shot back, start shooting threes, I mean, yeah, they definitely have an upside for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and in going to the play-in spots, I think these are the spots that are definitely just like you can throw in anybody, almost anybody. Like the Kings can compete for one of those spots, Timberwolves, you know, Pelicans, Grizzlies. I mean, it's just so wide open, man. And I love that the NBA has gone towards a play-in tournament format for this season because it doesn't lock things in at the end of the season and say, like, this is it. It adds a little bit more intrigue, a little bit more suspense. And I think it's another incentive for those teams that are lower to try to work their way up because in prior seasons, if you're 11th or 12th, 13th, it's just like, what are we playing for? But now if you can get to 10, you still have a spot to win, win out to a spot in the playoff, you know, playing spot. So, you know, we're going to see competitive basketball all the way through all 72 games because you're never really quite out of it unless you're 15. Then maybe, okay, maybe you can kind of throw in the towel at that point. But, you know, I love that format, man. All around, it's going to help the NBA in a huge way, especially once we get to the, you know, the end of the season.
I love that format too. Those games are going to be so fun to watch. Last year, we had a little sneak peek with Portland and Memphis. That was really fun to watch. It was. So having it on both the Western Conference and Eastern Conference, if it so happens, then that's going to be awesome. Those are going to be really fun games to watch. And as you said, a bunch of these teams in the West can make that 10 seed or the 9 seed and play their way into a playoff spot. All they need to do is win two games against the 7 seed or the 8 seed.
Right, right. And you know, even going towards the upper part of this, you know, the seeding predictions here, you know, I think we have the Mavericks the same. Jazz and Blazers, I mean, again, it's kind of the same thing. Like, I think these teams are given to be in the playoffs and probably even outside of the play-in spots. But, you know, their spots are interchangeable. And I wanted to talk about the Blazers here just for a minute because I don't have them higher than you. And, you know, some people definitely have them 7th or 8th. But it's definitely possible. But I'm just super confident in the bunch that, you know, Neil Olshey and these guys have put together, you know, finally putting a well-rounded roster around Damian Lillard. And Lillard by himself with an injury-decimated roster got to the play-in spot and then subsequently the playoffs. You know, two seasons ago, they were at the third seed. You know, and they had some troubles in the playoffs, as we know, against New Orleans. But, I mean, they really just rose the ranks. And I think this might even be a better roster than that one. There's depth all over the place. They finally had that third scorer in Gary Trent Jr., which was absolutely insane his last game. Another great two-way player. Like, there's just players that fill certain roles for them that they haven't had in a long time. Like Gary Trent, Covington, Derrick Jones Jr. They haven't had players like that as long as I can remember. And so I think they get a new dimension. And can juice up their offense, you know, to a point where they're already good. Like, they didn't really need to be offensive contributors. But now their defense could be a little bit more steady and consistent. So that's just where I'm coming from. It might be a little bit higher than most, but I just see it. I see the potential.
Yeah, I think they're much better than last year. As you said, Lillard almost single-handedly carrying them in. I love the Derrick Jones Jr. addition and the Robert Covington addition. They provide very unique skill sets that can really help a team win games. Mm-hmm. And me pushing them one spot from the 8th seed to the 7th seed makes me think that, like, I should have pushed them a bit further in, maybe 6 seeds, 5 seeds. So I'm definitely not arguing with you about the Blazers.
Yeah, I mean, like, no matter how that goes for them, I'm really excited. I really hope they can at least challenge in the playoffs and get to a second round, another conference final appearance. Because Damian Lillard is not getting any younger. Their core is kind of ready to win now. CJ's not getting any younger. So I think, you know, Lillard and those guys, they've earned another shot at the conference finals. And I really hope it pays off for them. So there's a lot of teams with a lot to lose here. I mean, Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, Jazz are another one. I mean, Jazz have had their difficulties in the playoffs. Just keep coming up short in the first round. So with a little bit more money going around on this team with Donovan Mitchell and Gobert, like, you're expected to win. Like, you're getting back some money. We want some return and investment. And that doesn't mean a six seed and a one and out. You know, we want to see tangible results. So that's another situation we're worth monitoring, at least, you know, for how I see it.
For sure. With the Jazz, I think I'm always so high on them every year, and they always disappoint me. They always get off to some slow starts. And
they do, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just going with them again to, like, get the three seed this year. Let's see if it happens.
It's possible. If they don't have one of those seesaw roller coaster seasons like they always do, like, I remember they went on a stretch after they got Jordan Clarkson last season in that trade. I think it was in January, and then they just went on a crazy streak. Like, they won like 17 of 18 games or something like that. Like, that always happens. I don't know what it is about the Jazz, but they have the highest highs in the regular season. And then you turn around, they're like, they lost six in a row. So I don't understand how that happens with that team. But if they can just kind of steady that a little bit, I can definitely see them getting to 5-4, maybe even 3. If they just stay steady, like, guys, just be consistent. Like, if you're just consistent, you can go a long way. That's all you really need to do.
And those games Donovan Mitchell had in the bubble were crazy. I think that he's going to take a step up this year and, like, really lead this team along with Rudy Gobert, of course, at the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, I have high hopes for those two guys. And you know, a lot of it comes down to, like I said before, how you're getting paid. You're getting paid like a max player. You know, you're expected to produce like one every night. And, you know, Gobert's extension, that's it might be a conversation for another day, but, you know, I'm skeptical. And, you know, his offensive ceiling doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. His age doesn't inspire a lot of confidence long term. But just looking at this season, I think he's going to be worth that deal. You know, he's a great anchor and, you know, great pick and roll partner for those guys. So I'm not going to question it this year. It's just the years following this one where it might break down a little bit for him.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think the Lakers or the Clippers are, like, unbeatable. I think Jazz, Nuggets, all these teams have a chance to beat them. Come playoff time, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're looking at the Lakers and Clippers. Like, so let's assume they hit those one and two spots in the conference, like we both predicted. That leads us to contemplating what a first-round matchup looks like for them. So, I mean, if, you know, we're in alignment here, the Suns are probably going to be one of those two teams. You know, if they hang out in the seventh or eighth spot, I would love to see one of those LA teams going up against the Suns there, because any way you slice that, we all win. Like, Devin Booker, Chris Paul, DeAndre Ayton going against the Lakers front court, the Lakers, you know, complete unit, the Clippers complete unit. You know, those are matchups I really wanted to see. So it's early and you never know what's going to happen, but I am rooting all the way for one of those first round matchups for many reasons, you know, matchups and storylines. You know, well, let's have the Lakers, because why not? I mean, that last time they played in the playoffs was 2010. That was the last time the Suns made the playoffs. So I'm going to put it down here right now. I'm going to call it. I'm going to, you know, whatever I got to do to make that happen. Let's get a Lakers Suns first round. I think that'd be
fantastic. That would be so cool. That would be so cool. I've got the Suns at 6 right now, so not really in that 7-8 spot. But if they drop down a little further and play one of the Lakers or the Clippers, that would be an insane series. Also the Pelicans, watching the Pelicans go up against the Lakers, for instance, with all their old guys playing against the new Lakers, that would be really cool to watch for me, especially. So yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, man. Like, to end it off, like, basically those teams that are competing for a play-in spot, they all have a lot to gain, because the teams they would probably be facing in the first round are veteran teams. They're established. They have stars. So that's a huge learning experience that will really kind of bring those guys along even faster. Like, if Mikal Bridges or, like, you know, John Morant or Jaren Jackson, like, if those guys go against the juggernauts of the conference, like, that's going to help their confidence immensely, and they're going to grow that much faster for those franchises, and their ceilings are already high. So why not give them another opportunity to display their skills to maybe the masses out there that aren't watching them enough, and also just, you know, bring them along a little bit faster. Like, everybody wins in this scenario.
Yep.
So I think that about covers it, man. We both went through our 15 teams. We went through a couple of hot takes, but I think overall, like, we're kind of, you know, relatively in agreement, and this is going to be a fantastic season. And both of these conferences are a lot of fun, but the West, especially, just because it's balanced, there aren't really any bad teams, and everybody has something to play for. even those teams that are, you know, might finish a little bit lower in the standings compared to, you know, what we might expect based on years past. But with that being said, Aram, I think it's going to wrap us up here, man. Thanks so much again for joining me. A great time. You know, we've been doing some great work over our no trade clause, and that's coming along nicely. So thanks for offering your time and your thoughts here this evening. It was a lot of fun.
Of course, Aaron. Thank you so much for having me on, and looking forward to do this again soon for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So I do want to like give us a chance to plug what we're working on here. Of course, no trade clauses are, you know, our child right now. You know, we've really been nurturing these things from conception in September to the current day. It's coming along nicely. We're finally live. So Ram, you want to go ahead and tell the people here where they can find us and what exactly we're offering a no trade clause?
Absolutely. So we started this project quite recently. We finished, I think, our full website earlier this month. You can find us at www.notradeclause.com. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram as well. We're going to start posting on there. Real good content. All six of us. Let's shout out Ali, Chanel, Oliver, and Anil as well. Yeah, really exciting things coming along. We have team cap sheets. We're going to start doing player sheets as well, having their contract breakdowns, some really interesting stuff, free agent list, draft picks, all the good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to echo what Aram has said. Like, I think we're all really proud of the product that has come along over the months of work here. And, you know, we have some resources here, both that are available now and also coming soon, and I think are going to separate us a little bit from the pack. But you know, if you guys are looking for any kind of business related issues or, you know, concepts, you know, tools, it's all available to you. It's, you know, free of charge, and go ahead and check us out and let us know what you think. Like, we're open to criticisms, and, you know, it's definitely not a finished product. You know, we're going to continue to work on this thing, but we're excited to see where it goes, especially as the season goes forward, it concludes, and we get to another offseason period next year. But overall, guys, thanks so much for joining us. You know, you can find us at Business Casual Basketball at bcbasketball.info. Also, BC Basketball 2 is the handle for Twitter and Instagram. And we do some similar stuff to No Trade Clause, some, you know, salary cap breakdowns. And, you know, we have a free agent list that's live now for 2020, and 2021 is coming soon. So that's always being worked on, guys. So be sure to check us out. And yeah, until next time, be sure to enjoy this nice slate of games. Enjoy this NBA season. And we'll be back in 2021 to catch you guys with some more awesome content and NBA analysis. So until then, guys, happy new year. And we'll see you on here real soon.
Happy new year.